You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and welcome along to the Daily Racing Podcast brought to you by William Hill. You join us on Tuesday's edition of the podcast where we're looking ahead to the racing at both Kempton and Southall. Unfortunately, Newton Abbott have been forced to abandon their car, but we've still got two meetings to bring you on Tuesday afternoon. And Darren Owen, Ollie Pimlott and Paddy Aspel will be your team in the studio from 1:50pm. But joining myself, Sam Norris, ahead of all the action is Rory De Laghi. Good afternoon to you, Rory.
Good afternoon.
Are you well? How are you?
I'm not bad at all.
Good stuff. Enjoy the return of the flat season over the weekend.
Yeah, it's all right, I suppose. If you like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
The flat season is a mystery to many of us.
Yes.
Until the Craven meeting at Newmarket at the very earliest, and sometimes the Guineas meeting, and sometimes the Derby meeting, and sometimes Royal Ascot. It takes a while for everything to slot into place, and it's difficult betting on races where you haven't seen a lot of the horses for months on end, and you're guessing how much they've thrived or otherwise during the winter.
Mm, absolutely. Fortunately, we're looking ahead to the jumping action on the Monday jury, which we'll kickstart the podcast off with, as we always do on a Tuesday. And this all looks ahead to a tremendous 3 days of racing to come from Aintree, the Grand National meeting, of course. And the first question on the jury this week surrounds the big race itself. Who is your fancy for the Grand National and why? Verlium Rouge, the 10-1 favourites here. Definitely Red, 11-1. 12-1, 1 for Arthur. Black Lion is 14-1 with Cause of Causes in the Last Samurai, 16-1, more of that in Pleasant Company, 20s and bigger. The rest, as we record the podcast this morning, there's been a few notable absentees who've come out of the race. Carlingford Luck amongst them, which means the weights for everyone will go up a little bit. Nine horses in total have been pulled out of the Grand National this morning. Do you have a fancy for the big race, Rory?
Well, I fancied one at a big price for a long time, and unfortunately he's one of the absentees today. He's met a setback, Maggio. He was one of the horses I had in mind as being capable of springing a shock at a massive price. Unfortunately, we won't see Maggio on the day. And to be honest, we've got the right front end of the market, really. It's very, very hard to knock holes on Vieux Lion Rouge, who's favourite for the race at the moment. He's younger than ideal, but the race is becoming that kind of race. There are a lot more 7 and 8-year-olds in the contest now than there traditionally would be. It's a race where, historically, the more experience you had over fences, the better for you. That's becoming slightly less the case. And someone dug out stats that, you know, you need to have a minimum of 10 runs over fences, and a couple of the fancied horses have less than that. But three of the first four home last year had, you know, I think they had 9, 10, 13 and 8 runs over fences. So actually, improving chasers are beginning to come to the fore. So the likes of Vieux Lion Rouge and definitely Red.
Yeah,
and they're first and second in the market as it stands, but they stack up tremendously well when you sort of look at the relevant form on I guess the ground's going to be good to soft on the day. It's a lot softer on the national course than it is in the mild mid course. I think it's going to be quick on the mild mid course this week, but it's going to be on the soft side of good, certainly for the national itself. They seem to be hell bent on making sure there's a bit of soft in the going description for the national. It's a bummer if you've got a top
good
class
ground horse,
if you've got a Mr. Frisk, for example, who broke the record for the race when winning in 1990. You're never going to win a race these days because it's always going to be good to soft or soft. But that's not a problem for Vieux Lion Rouge. It's not a problem for definitely Red. They're both on the right kind of weight. Both on 10-11 at the moment. That'll go up a pound, I think.
Yes, now Carlingford
Lockout, but that's still a really good racing weight. And even if you weren't looking at that in itself, I would always look for horses carrying less than 11 stone, ideally. And of course, the way the race has gone, there are more and more horses around that 11-stone mark because I think bottom weight's going to be 10-stone 7, 10-stone 8. So there's not an awful lot there. But the lower you are down the weights, The better, you know, the longer you're carrying a weight for over four, you know, you're carrying over 4.25 miles, that's going to be more of a test for you than carrying over 2 miles. So in handicapping terms, those at the bottom have some kind of an advantage. So it's really dull for me at the moment that those are the top of my list. Vuillet Rouge and definitely Red. Last year's runner-up has got a terrific chance again, but he's going to be carrying top weight. That's very tough. But his run last year was a massive one because I think he did a bit too much too soon. And he came out looking the best horse in the race, to be honest. Others of interest that aren't very short in the betting. I mean, you know, Black Lion, one for Arthur, another pair of eight-year-olds who are improving, who've run in the right sort of races. One for Arthur's big eye catcher in the Beecher, beaten less than three lengths in the end. Then he won the Classic Chase at Warwick. And he's, you know, he'll have 10, 11. Black Lion ends up with slightly more than 11 stone, last year's RSA winner. And he's of interest. But again, these are horses who are just very well found in the market. So if I could find one who's a big, big price still, who I think might come in for support, ironically, given that the O'Leary brothers were kicked off massively when the weights came out for this, they still have a half decent chance of winning this. Rogue Angel's got a very good profile for it. It gets in there very close to bottom weight. He was number 42 on the list. He got up a fair bit now. Guaranteed a run, and although he's been beaten 20 lengths and more on all his runs this season, he hasn't been entirely disgraced. And Mouse Morris was bang out of form through the winter. He couldn't get a winner for love nor money from last summer through to February, really. And all of a sudden, the yard's been in really good form. So he's a former Irish Grand National winner.
Yeah.
And Irish Grand National winners and horses who have been placed in Irish Grand National have got a very good record in this. Of course, Rule the World was placed in Irish National as well. And Rogue Angel, I thought, you know, he's a nine-year-old with experience. He's been treading water a little bit this season, but he's not badly handicapped. The type just to bounce back given this experience. And he's, what is he, 33 to 40?
33 to 1, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's about the only one I can pick out at a price who looks very interesting.
Okay. Rogue Angel and potentially a big price at 33 to 1, but you're fairly sweet on the horses towards the head of the market. You mentioned the trends there, which used to be absolutely rock solid for this race, and they are getting broken more and more. Is there any rhyme or reason behind that? Or
many horses are fitting a very similar profile in this race. I think the National was a much more interesting race for me when horses with a range of quality got into it. And horses who jumped and stayed but were sort of lower class horses had a chance of winning the National off 10 stone, even from out of the weights. I remember when Bobby Joe won the race, and I'd backed Blue Charm that year, and they were first and second. They were both a stone out of the weights. And Merry People would have been placed that year, would have been at sort of 150 to 1 shot, horse who you know would have had 8 stone in the long handicap. The old National gave horses like that a chance of winning. Now, it's almost like we've cloned a Grand National horse. Everything that gets in the race is rated between 145 and 155. They've come through the same sort of races, and you end up just having an identikit parade of horses, which I don't think theoretically makes it a classier race. I think it makes it a duller race, quite frankly.
Yeah.
I'd rather we had horses with lower handicap marks but with a profile that suited the race. Horses who'd won over a certain trip, horses who'd won or been placed in qualifying races. Last year, for example, we had former Grand National winners not able to run in the race because they were out of the handicap. Horses who'd won Grand National trials not able to get in the race.
Yeah.
And I think that's wrong. I think we should go back to the drawing board and try to make it a more interesting race rather than just a, in inverted commas, classier race.
Yeah, I'm with you. The next question then is surrounding the Aintree Hurdle, one of the other big races of the week. Can anything touch Bouvardaire in the Aintree Hurdle? Bouvardaire currently a 1-2 chance. Apples Jade 4-1, 7-1 the new one. Yanworth 8-1, 10s and bigger the rest. Obviously it's over half a mile further than the Champion Hurdle was, but with question marks about where Apples Jade and Yanworth are heading.
It might end up being a weakish race.
Yeah.
And of course he was an impressive winner at the meeting last year, Bouvardaire, having been beaten in the Supreme. I see one or two people in the jury said, oh well, he's proved his stamina. Well, he's won a novice chase at 2.5 miles. He's a 2 miler through and through. For me, he's a horse with a sharp turn of foot. He does relax in his races, and that gives him a chance of staying 2.5. But you know, Istabrak was beaten in this by Pridwell. So, you know, you need to have a horse who's suited by the conditions. It's not just a case of going, well, you know, if you want the Champion Hurdle, you're bound to win this. It hasn't worked out that way historically. And, of course, you know, a lot of people say it wasn't a vintage Champion Hurdle. But, of course, half the issue with the entry this year is that Willie Mullins and Gordon Elliott are going hammer and tongs for the Irish Trainers Championship. And some of their horses who might normally have run at this meeting could be missing it.
and heading to Punchestown instead. Or
if you're getting non-runner no bet, or you just wait for the decks, Apple's Jade each way in this. She won by 41 lengths here last year in a Grade One, and she could have won by 61 lengths if she was asked to. It was one of the most remarkable performances you'll ever see. Mm. You can't, you know, everyone says, well, you can't take the form literally because they all ran badly in behind. Well, they all had difficult conditions to deal with, and she dealt with them brilliantly. Yeah. She doesn't, the ground is pretty much immaterial to her. She won the Mare's Hurdle at Cheltenham in really gritty style. Her jumping is absolutely superb, and that really suits Aintree. Aintree suits a really bold jumping hurdler, which she is. I would fancy her getting the Mare's Alliance against Bouverdere over this trip. And as the race stands up, he'll be odds on. She'll be for like a 4-1 poke.
Yeah.
She is the each way bet of the century, however many horses line up, because she'll be, you know, clear second best in theory. But for me, she might actually be a better horse over this trip against Bouverdere anyway, given the weights that they carry. So I hope she runs, because she'd be a decent bet.
Okay, Apple's Jade currently 4-1 in the betting, then behind Bouverdere, the 1-2 favourite. That is for the Aintree Hurdle. Next up, will the favourite in the Liverpool Hurdle make amends for his Stayers Hurdle reverse at Cheltenham? This is, of course, you know what I mean, Harry, who was one of the warm orders of the week at Cheltenham and was soundly beaten the Stayers Hurdle and didn't appear to have that many excuses for his defeat either, Rory.
Not really, no. A little bit disappointing, but at the same time, he ran really well, so you can't say, well, he's just underperformed there for whatever reason. He seemed to run his race and just wasn't quite good enough, given that the winner got a tremendous ride. You know, maybe swap the tactics of the race round a little bit. They went hard in the midsection of the race, and I think the leader did a little bit too much.
Yes.
Whereas when he won that race a couple of years ago, he set a just set a true pace throughout, which suits him better. That's Cole Hardin, of course. And on quick ground at Aintree, he could be an interesting one again. It's difficult finding a likely field for the for the Liverpool Hurdle, unfortunately.
We don't have betting for it. And again, as you mentioned, with Willie Mullins and Gordon Elliott going toe-to-toe in Ireland, will Nicholls Canyon even line up?
Exactly. Well, it'll be a quick ground anyway. Of course, Nicholls Canyon has won at Aintree before, but you know they might want to save him for Punchestown. And Yanworth might be going for the... he's more likely to go for the 2.5-mile hurdle, I would say, than the 3-mile hurdle.
Yes.
But we don't really know. So it's a difficult race one pick at the moment. But yeah, he's been a very, very straightforward horse, you know what I mean, Harry. He's never been head and shoulders above the opposition. And before Cheltenham were saying, well, he keeps getting the job done, doesn't he? So there might be a bit more under the tank, and I think you find out pretty much how good he was at Cheltenham. He could win again, but he's had a fairly tough season, and whether he wants really quick ground is a question as well. So it's there for the taking, but obviously with no idea of the field, it's a difficult race to get involved in. Cole Hardin will surely run, and the ground will surely be quick, so he's the obvious one at this stage as an alternative. Because again, although he was he fourth in the end?
This year, Cole Hardin. But
Gavin Sheehan, for me, he tried to press on very aggressively down the hill, and that doesn't always work. Whereas when he won the race, I thought Gavin just set him out there, went reasonably fast, and just kept going reasonably fast throughout. Whereas this time, he tried to mix the tactics a little bit, but there's only so long you can go at top pace for, and I think he was trying to do too much. So with a slightly more reserved ride from the front, he's a big player.
Okay, next up, how about Q-Card in the bowl? Q-Card 7-4, Empire of Dirt 3-1, Bristol Demise 6s, 7-1 Outlander and Sub-Lieutenant, bigger prices for the rest of them. Q-Card, could you have him on your mind?
No one likes Q-Card more than me.
Right.
I've been a fully paid-up founder member of the Q-Card fan club, but he just can't go on quick ground these days. Mm. It's as simple as that. There was a suggestion of that when he was a bit disappointing in the King George. He was hugely impressive at Haydock. He showed that he all his old ability is intact. He should have been tanking along in the Gold Cup, given that they didn't go a million miles an hour. And he was beaten when he fell.
Right.
Unlike last year. Last year he was running away when he came down. This time he was in trouble. You know, his guts might have carried him into a place, but I don't think so. So the fact that people are going, well, he fell at the third last and the Gold Cup last year, he did it again this year. It's almost like it's a perfect prep. It's not the perfect prep. It's a terrible prep. And if the rain came, he'd have a great chance. And of course, he was really impressive last year. He showed when winning this last year that he probably would have won the Gold Cup if he'd stayed up anyway. Then he went on quicker ground at Punchestown in his next start and was disappointing. And I think he's had a pretty hard season this time around as well. I couldn't have him. I'd love to see him win, but I couldn't have him on what I think is going to be quick ground. It's either... Well, Empire Dirt's short enough, given he was desperately disappointing in the Ryanair. If he hadn't run in that, he'd look a good thing for this.
Yes.
Because, you know, I think he wants 3 miles. He wants good ground. And, of course, his Irish Gold Cup second has been well franked with Sizing John winning the Gold Cup. But he was desperately disappointing in the Ryanair. And that hasn't been factored into his price enough, I don't think. If Sub-Lieutenant ran here rather than in the 2.5 mile race, then I'd be all over him.
Right.
I think he'd have an absolutely massive chance. But the problem is, connections are probably going to favour the shorter race. So you've got to wait for Dex to see what's what. But yeah, I like him a lot as a performer.
7-1.
Very, very, you know, very good jumper horse. He wants good ground. His best trip is probably just short of 3 miles, but he does stay 3.
Okay. So we'll turn then 7-1 in the betting for the bowl. Penultimate question then, what's your best bet for Aintree across the 3 days?
Again, it's hard to say with, well, you've got prices in front of you there probably, which helps with some of them.
For some of the races, well, yeah.
Have you any of Thursday's races?
What have we got coming up on Thursday? We've got the bowl and the Aintree hurdle.
You got the manifest. What's the top notch around a 6-4 shot for the...
Yeah.
He's an absolute...
Fox Hunters and the juvenile hurdle on that day as well.
Yeah, I'm not... Defi de Soja with the juvenile hurdle. I could see Devan Bear running really well. Top Notch should absolutely run away with a manifesto.
Right.
He didn't get the credit he deserved for finishing second to York Hill. Everyone raved about York Hill and how he was untouchable. Well, Top Notch has beaten a length after losing 5 lengths.
Yeah.
At the second last, with the only mistake he's ever made over fences, and I thought was jockey error as well. That he just, you know, if the jockey could have seen a stride and asked him for a big one, he would have found a big one. Whereas he kind of let the horse do his own thing.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
There was a miscommunication between him. He's got in too tight, he's lost ground, lost momentum, and then he's come rattling back on the run-in. He's nearly as good as York Hill in that form, and yet everyone thinks York Hill's going to win next year's Gold Cup, and no one thinks Top Notch is going to win anything. If York Hill lined up in the manifesto, he'd be what, 1-3?
Yeah.
At Top Notch at 6-4 or thereabouts is virtually buying money.
Okay. And finally, how will the battle for the British Trainers title look by Saturday night? Could well be decided by the Grand National.
Yeah, couldn't give a monkey. It's the least interesting thing in the world. You know, everyone, it's Grand National Day.
Yes.
Most people will be able to answer questions like, name me the trainers of the Grand National winners in the 1970s. You might have to rack your brain a little bit and work it out. They say, who was champion trainer each of those years? No one gives a monkey's about that. Why people are still... getting het up about who wins the Trainers' Championship when you don't get £1 million for winning it. You don't get any more horses for winning it.
No.
It's bizarre that we're hung up on it.
Do you think that anybody actually cares, or do you think it's just to fill?
Well, Paul Nichols
filled newspaper columns. Oh yeah,
yeah, it is very good newspaper fodder.
Yes,
and you look at the Flat Jockeys Championship, the championship there. Jockeys care about it for a year. They'd like to be champion jockey once.
Yes.
Most of them who become champion jockey go, are you going to go for next year? No. It was a horrible running around the country this year.
Yes.
I'll just concentrate on the bigger races. The trainers do care more about it, some more than others. I think Paul Nichols cares much more than anybody else. And it seems that Willie and Gordon are both desperate to win that, even though Willie's won it God knows how many times.
Yeah.
It should mean a lot more for Gordon. But obviously, with Willie losing a lot of horses to Gordon this year, it would be particularly satisfying to win that.
Yes.
But yeah, I remember when Paul Nichols won the Grand National a few years ago with Neptune Collange, when he'd given up winning the Trainers' Championship. What he cared about there was he won the Trainers' Championship, not that he won the Grand National.
Yeah, sure.
He was like, you know, he jumped almost 3 inches off the ground, which is impressive, and said, oh, we've blown Nicky Henderson out of the water. It was a very odd reaction. But yeah, so he cares about it. The newspapers care about it.
Yeah,
because it's good for column inches and stuff, but no one remembers it. No one remembers it historically. You know, if a trainer is 20 times champion trainer, then you might remember that as a fact. But no one can ever tell you year to year who's won the Trainers' Championship, because it doesn't matter to anybody else. It's all about the horses, not about the trainers.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. Nicky Henderson and Paul Nichols then set to continue their battle for the champion trainers title. That's the Monday jury. Then we'll move on to look at some of Tuesday's races. We've got 3 from Kempton and 1 from the Fiversand at Suddle to look at with Rory. The 2:30 at Kempton kicks us off. Got a novices chase here over 3 miles. A field of 5 lining up for it. But the majority of these look fairly interesting, Rory, as novice chasers.
Yeah, I think we can throw out Goose and Maverick.
Yes, yeah, bar perhaps that one.
And... Favorito Box is very, very hard to fancy on the form he's shown in the UK. Mm-hmm. But there is the possibility that he might just be a good ground horse who will suddenly show his form. And of course, Paul Nicholls, a lot of his team he reckons he's going to do very well with his quick ground horses this spring. And Favorito Box might be one of those. But on what he's shown thus far, he's got a fair bit to prove. On the other hand, both Bivouac and Jimmy the Jet Plane are horses to be a little bit wary of. They're the class acts in the race for me. Although Bivouac will be getting weight in a handicap from both Jimmy the Jet Plane and Lorium. I think if you ask Nicky Henderson, who was the most talented of Bivouac and Lorium, he'd say Bivouac every day. But Bivouac made exceptionally heavy weather of winning at 1-7 in a bad novice chase at Leicester last time out. I'm inclined to forgive him that on the basis that maybe he bounced a little bit, having been off the track for a fair while before a good second on his chase debut. He's always looked a chaser. Big, big, strong horse who give his hurdles a lot of daylight. He won a race at Huntingdon last season over hurdles that worked out tremendously well. But, you know, you do have that in mind that he struggled to win a moderate race at Leicester last time out. And all his wins have come on soft ground. And it's going to be quick again at the Kempton tomorrow. Jimmy the Jet Plane, all his form is in good ground, good quick ground. But he does tend to finish second in these small field races. Jumps well enough, often looks like he should be winning races, and then says, after you, Claude, at the end of it. So he might find a way of losing this again. And I guess Lorium is the most straightforward of the front three in the betting. But deep down, I don't think he's quite as talented as Bivouac. And it'd be interesting to see how they bet. With Nico riding Lorium, I mean, the reason Nico's riding Lorium is because Noel Feely's got a relationship with the connections of Bivouac.
Yes.
And therefore, you know, it's not a case of stable jockey rides one and the second string gets ridden by someone else. Because Noel Feely would have ridden for the owners of Bivouac and not ridden for Lorium's owners. That's the obvious way of playing it. I'll probably give him a chance, Bivouac.
Okay.
But, you know, he's on his last chance now, and I'm hoping he might end up being a 3-1 shot in that field, in which case he's interesting. I wouldn't want to take a very short price about him, but given that he's got a lower rating than Jimmy the Jet Plane and Lorium, and he's only £4 higher in the handicap than Favorito Box, but he's giving him £7. So theoretically, he comes out as the fourth best horse in the race on the ratings. So if he ended up being third favourite for the race, then I'd certainly be happy to take a chance on him for all the Leicester race raised a few doubts.
Okay. Bivouac there then in that 2:30 race at Kempton. We stay at Kempton then for the next race on today's podcast. This comes up at 3:40, a 3-mile handicap chase upcoming here at the time recording, a field of 10 going to post. Anything caught the eye here, Rory?
Well, yeah, there's a very obvious form line in here. Bugsy Malone beats Cloudy Bob here over course and distance on the 18th of March, and they reoppose, and Cloudy Bob is waited to get his revenge. Bugsy Malone 12-4 to carry here in theory, and that's because of the fact that he qualifies for this because his rating is 1-2-2. And it's a not 120, and you're allowed to do that. But obviously, 12-4 would be more than you'd normally be able to carry in this. But he's ridden by Harry Reid this time around, son of Tim Reid, for those who've got long memories for jockeys riding in the north. Tom Cannon rode him last time out. He travelled really well that day, never looked in a huge amount of danger. Cloudy Bob then came with what looked a very strong challenge in the running, but he wouldn't go past. And that's the issue with Cloudy Bob. He's waited to win this race. He's got ideal conditions, and he will be second again.
Right.
He might be second to something else, but I think the likeliest scenario again is that Harry Reid's £7 will make a big difference to Bugsy Malone, means that his weight is not a stopping one. And he is a very talented young jockey. I've got no problem with that at all. Cloudy Bob should be winning it and might end up starting favourite in the end, but I can just see Cloudy Bob flattering to deceive. If you're looking for a place spot, have Cloudy Bob as a banker here, because he always runs well at Kempton. He does most of his good runs have come on good ground. He's become very well handicapped on the pick of his form, but he just does not want to put his head in front. But he's got the perfect scenario to cruise through this race and look dangerous before flattering. And I think, again, it'll be Bugsy Malone who will be the hare.
Okay. final selection there then?
Bugsy Malone.
Bugsy Malone, yeah. to win, and Cloudy Bob, a solid yardstick perhaps to chase him home back in second
place.
Have the
forecast.
Well, yeah, we stay at Kempton now for the 410. A mare's handicap hurdle upcoming here. 3 miles is the trip for this class. 4, 9 of them go to post. What did you make of these mares, Rory?
Well, the blindingly obvious one is Time for West, who's won her last two, having shown very little in her first three starts over hurdles, beaten 45 lengths, 39 lengths, and 68 lengths. In fairness, she caught a couple of tartars in there. She was behind Willoughby Court on her hurdles debut, for example.
Right.
And behind Mariah's Legend, who's a decent performer on her last qualifying run, having showed ability on her bumper debut. But then she was massively improved off a mark of 98 at Market Raisin. That was a decent enough race for the grade that she ran in against the boys as well. She beat Norse Light 4.5 lengths, pulling a cart. And she looked an absolute certainty on her penalty at Taunton last week. And again, she won that very easy one by 16 lengths, with Jack Savage claiming 7. They didn't need to claim off her, to be perfectly honest. And she's in here off 105 again. So she's going to be an odds-on favourite, running up the same mark as last time. Aidan Coleman on instead of the conditional jockey, because it was a conditional jockey's race last time. She's going to be very hard to beat, as long as this doesn't come too soon, because it's 3 runs in quick succession. First one was on the 27th of March, which is just a week ago, then turned out at Taunton at the weekend. So it's 3 runs in the space of a week.
Yeah.
And for a 5-year-old mare, that might be enough. But in terms of what her mark should be, she looks at 120 plus mare.
Right, okay.
She looks different class to these if it doesn't come too soon. But it will be a decent each way race, because she's bound to be an odds on shot. And I thought the one to be with, looking at the tissue for this, Hollow Bay, the top weight.
Right.
Now, there's a slight question mark about her stamina for 3 miles, but 3 miles quick round Kempton flat track. If she's going to stay, she's going to stay at around here. And she was a good second over 2.5 miles here in a maiden hurdle last May. She then did everything but win over the same trip at Ludlow in October. And she's not been quite as good in 2 starts over fences, back over hurdles now. Her trainer does well here. I'm not a big fan of Paul Weber as a trainer, but his horses tend to run above themselves at Kempton. They tend to go well on flat tracks and good ground for some reason. And I thought she was guaranteed to run well. The pick of her form, for me, makes her the second best horse in the race.
Okay.
And I saw she was, the tissue I looked at had her in at 20-1, which strikes me as being at least twice the price she should be. If she was 10-1, she'd still be interesting each way. So she would be my pick in the race for those purposes, admitting that Time for West looks an absolute stone-bonking certainty if she's not feeling the effects of a couple of... Well, they weren't even hard races, they were very easy races.
Right.
She didn't have to be pushed out either time, so she should be fine with that. But you'd rather back a 12-1 shot each way finishing second than a 4-7 winner.
Yep. Hollow Bay then, the each way call in that 410 at Kempton. We go to Suttle then to take in one race on the Fiver Sand. This is a handicap over 7 furlongs. It's their 420, a class 3 event, and by far and away the best race on the card at Suttle. Just 5 of them going to post, Rory, and quite a few Suttle regulars in here.
Yes, there are. I'm going to go for a Suttle debutant.
Right.
Because Call Out Loud and Custard the Dragon, they met each other last time out at Wolverhampton, finished first and second. Custard the Dragon, maybe a little bit unlucky with the way that race panned out. On the other hand, Mick Appleby, now that he's settled into his new yard, absolutely flying again. It's been a bit of a stop-start winter from Mick, but he always knew he was changing stables and there was that sort of transitional period. So you'd have to respect Call Out Loud, who's thriving at the moment. But in saying that, both Custard the Dragon and Call Out Loud have gone up a fair bit in the weight since the start of the year. Whereas Thomas Cranmer... has been sitting on the mark he got last season. He's a 3-year-old against older horses. That's always a bit of a question mark. But he is he's very much bred for this test. He comes from a yard whose horses are running really well at the moment. And he's by Hard Spun, US sire, out of a mare by Limehouse, another US sire. And that's tends to be a fairly good angle,
yep,
backing US sires, their progeny on 5%, as long as they're dirt sires. And the stats also point to that. If you backed all progeny of Hardspun blind, win only at Suttle over the few years that they've been running, or a couple of years they've been running, you'd have made a decent profit. And this horse looks the type to improve on the form he showed last year for his first try on this surface. And he could easily be a little bit better than these.
Okay.
At the weights, you know, he could run a slightly better races than this. I know he's bottom weight, but he's actually higher rated than most of his rivals.
Mm.
And I think he's worth taking a punt on. Again, rather depends what price he's put in at.
Yes.
There's a reason to believe that most of those, although they're in form, Call Out Loud, Cost of the Dragon, for example, are horses who have now sort of found their place in the handicap. They're no longer progressing. That's debatable, obviously, but
yeah,
you know, these horses of that kind of mark just can't keep getting better and better all the time. Mm. They will find their level at some stage, whereas Thomas Cranmer, you know, he said one run in the nursery, he was a faller at Chester last year. And I think people talk about how that would affect his confidence and stuff like that. And he's had 6 months off, and
yeah,
I don't think that's going to bother him at all, to be perfectly honest. So he should handle the surface, and he just might be able to outclass his rivals.
Thomas Cranmer then gets the nod in that 4:20 race at Southwell. Just give us a quick recap, please, then, if you would, Rory, of your four selections for the races we've looked at on Tuesday.
Yeah, Bivouac in the 2:30 at Kempton. In the 3:40, I think Bugsy Malone again will beat Cloudy Bob. In the 4:10, the favourite looks to have a very good chance, but I think Hollow Bay each way at a double figure price looks a decent bet given the shape of that race. And then we finish with Thomas Cranmer in the 4:20 at Southwell.
Excellent stuff. There we are then. Thoughts of Rory De Laghi ahead of Tuesday's racing. You can hear it all live from 1:50 p.m. with Darren Owen, Ollie Pimlott and Paddy Aspel in the studio to guide you through the cards at both Kempton and Southwell. Thank you very much for that, Rory. Best of luck and enjoy the action.
Thank you very much.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.